All right, Alexander, let's talk about what's going on in the UK. But really, what's going on in the UK is kind of what's going on in most other places in the world, or what's coming, what's about to come to most places around the world. Inflation, rising energy costs, high electric bills, high petrol bills, petrol costs, food shortages. Just basic misery. And Boris Johnson continues to talk about getting more anti-ship missiles to Ukraine and propping up the Zelensky regime. He seems like he's completely disengaged from the reality of what's happening in the UK. I mean, I think Boris has really lost his senses. He's completely absorbed in the Zelensky rock and roll show.
I think you're absolutely
What
right.
other way can I explain it?
You are completely right. As, by the way, is Biden in the US to the extent that Biden is able to think of anything, and of course the EU Commission is. I mean, you know, Ursula and all those people are too. But let's talk about Britain, which is of course the country where I live. Now, first of all, we've had the Governor of the Bank of England coming out and saying that the food situation is looking apocalyptic. That was his word. He talked about an apocalypse in terms of food. And of course, that's been broadcast all over Britain. People are seeing food prices rise. People are seeing energy prices and household prices, household costs rise, and they're rising all the time. We're now having the stirrings on the labour market because people's wages are declining, real wages are declining so fast that we're starting to see the first signs of a pushback from workers. And there's talk now that there's going to be a comprehensive rail strike in a few weeks. And that could stop all transport, all the major freight transport around Britain. And there's worries that that would bring Britain, in effect, to a complete economic stop. We also are looking at growing concerns about the fact that the political situation, the government is completely at sea. It has no actual policy, no real sense of what to do in all of this situation. And of course, we have an opposition which is similarly at sea also. Now, all of this is happening at the same time as Britain is supposed to be celebrating the Queen's Jubilee. It's been completely overshadowed. And I have to say, I think something has to give in a few weeks. I don't quite know what it's going to be, but things look particularly bad when the Governor of the Bank of England starts talking in this way, when inflation is now officially at 9%, which is the worst it's been for 40 years, when everybody now fully expects it to be in double figures within, you know, this is the official figures, within a few months or weeks, when the currency is starting to depreciate, you know, like the euro is. Well, you know, something has to give. Somebody has to take over and start doing the kind of things that are necessary. The trouble is, I look around and I can't see who that person is. It's one of the most terrible times I can remember. I've never known a time quite like this. I can rem the closest approximation I can remember is a brief period in the 1970s, at the end of the Heath, the Conservative government of, you know, Edward Heath, when again there was a moment of tension, but there wasn't that same sense of all embracing political malaise as we're getting in Britain now, and you're starting to get the sense that people are now talking about it with each other, and they're saying increasingly, where is it going? I noticed that even Boris Johnson's own newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, is now starting to criticise him and are talking about how the situation is turning disastrously wrong and that they're worrying that it's becoming so bad that if the Conservatives lose power in this catastrophe, they may never be in power again.
Yeah, but what are the options that that are left to the UK? I mean, do people in the UK, do they get out on the streets? Do they protest? can they force snap elections?
Yes.
For,
yes, they
for
can.
Boris? Can they get another vote? Is Labour in a position to make things better? What options do they have to get out of this mess?
This is a very good situation.
Boris is completely disengaged. He's in la la land.
Yes. Well, this is the fundamental problem, because yes, people do protest. People can come out and protest in Britain, and when they do it in their usual tough-minded but very law-abiding, very orderly way. And we saw that during the Brexit war. And if it comes to that, we will see it again. I mean, never underestimate the sheer toughness of the British electorate when it really gets, worked up and determined to force change. I mean, you know, it broke the opposition of the political class over Brexit. It could potentially do it again. The rail strike that people are talking about is just possibly the first indicator of this. I mean, be very clear, if there's a rail strike, if there's no fuel, because we're already fuel costs are already rising, but if there's no petrol or diesel in the garages, in the gas stations, if everything comes to a complete stop, that is a huge crisis in Britain, and one which the government might not survive anyway. The problem is this. Boris, as you rightly say, is completely he's completely disconnected from reality. I think most people looking at him now accept that he's got no solutions to this problem. People are looking at the alternatives. Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak, Ben Wallace on the Conservative side. There's talks that the Conservatives might bring back the arch remainder and diplomat Jeremy Hunt. Can't say he inspires. Look at the Labour side of the thing. Keir Starmer? How is he different from Boris? What real options are there? Now, once upon a time, in Britain, the political class was extraordinarily skilled at understanding what the country was talking about and was willing always to compromise with a nation, and could adapt its policies and could throw up a leader who would change course. I mean, you know, bear in mind, remember that, you know, Margaret Thatcher, for example, appeared in the 80s and shifted direction. And she did so very much, by the way, in response to a general feeling in Britain that things had to be change. Where is that person today? And I just don't see that person. And that's a very, very dangerous situation to be in Britain. And I've never seen it happen before. Now, what we need to do is we need to go back to our traditional policies. Britain was always very careful to keep doors open to everybody, to keep talking to everybody, even, you know, obviously not when we were in a war situation, but theoretically we're not in a war situation. We used to be very good at that sort of thing. We were very flexible. What we need is to rediscover those skills, to have somebody talk to the Americans, to the Europeans, ultimately to the Russians, broker that settlement, end this crisis, find the solution. Margaret Thatcher used to do that. Other British prime ministers used to do that too. Who today in Britain has those skills?
Everything you've said is the exact opposite direction of how Boris is taking things.
Absolutely.
I mean, the exact diametrically opposite direction as to how Boris is handling this.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's wrapped up in his Churchillian fantasies. And remember, he wrote a book about Churchill. I mean, you know, he imagines himself the Churchill biographer, and he's absolutely swept along by his own rhetoric on all of this. So you're absolutely right. He has no real way of pulling back, because I think psychologically he's totally committed to this course. But the trouble is, so are all these people around him. Sunak may be less so, but Sunak is looking increasingly discredited anyway. Liz Truss and Ben Wallace, well, you can't really see these people having the necessary brain power or political flexibility to change course. Jeremy Hunt, frankly, he looks to me like a lightweight. I can't imagine that he'd been able to shift gears in the way that needed to be done. And Kwasi Kwarteng, who I used to talk about, has vanished. I mean, we barely hear about him anymore. I don't know what's happened to him. Maybe he's biding his time, maybe not. But frankly, he's simply not around. So none of the people that I thought once might change course are there to do it. And the Labour opposition looks, to be frank about it, a mess.
Okay, so even Farage has kind of lost his mind a bit this. I mean, I like Farage. I mean, he gave interesting speeches at the EU Parliament, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But even he seemed to have succumbed to this hysteria. I mean, you know, Putin has really... he's infected their brains and he's broken them down. And so the question is, is there a way out for the UK?
Well,
I have to be honest. I mean, I know that it'll find its way out. I believe it'll find its way out. But I just don't see it.
I really don't at this moment in time. Yeah, I mean, there are remnants on the left of the Labour Party. And I mean, I want to say that. I mean, you know, the Corbyn is still there. They're only hanging on just because he's not a member of the Parliamentary Labour Party still. But there are about a dozen Labour MPs who probably have their doubts and, you know, scared to express them. I suspect there's a rather larger grouping of Conservative MPs who, again, probably not willing to say very much. And as for Farage, I think he's been under enormous pressure because, of course, there's always this story that Farage ultimately, you know, was bankrolled by the Russians. He used to appear a lot on RT, so he might be pressured by this. To my mind, the only person who has the political skills to turn this round at the moment would be Farage. And what he's got to do is he's got to look at what the people who think like him in the US are doing. Now, remember Robert Barnes and that live stream we did with him when he said that they're starting to crystallise the opposition within the Republican Party. We saw 57 Republican congressmen vote against the $40 billion bill. Now, 11 Republican senators have done the same. It was interesting to see who they were. People like, obviously, Rand Paul, but Josh Hawley was there. People like that. They are the, let's be clear about this, they're the people who are seeing the problems and who are offering the route out. And Farage needs to look at them and he needs to say to himself, that's what they're doing in the US. That's what I need to do in Britain. I've always won when I've gone against the political class. When I join them, I lose.
Yeah. Yeah, Farage is at his best when he's going against the elites.
Yes.
When he joins them, he does, it's not a good look for him.
It's not at all. It's not a good look for him. I mean, if there is a rail strike, by the way, make no mistake about it, it'll be a massive problem for the government, for the Conservative government. It'll be in some ways an even bigger problem, I suspect, for the Labour opposition. Because Keir Starmer, I mean, he'd have to make a decision. Does he support the strike or does he oppose it? And I can't really see him supporting the strike. But, of course, if he opposes it, he is going against the Labour grassroots. So that would potentially create an opening for someone like Farage.
Final question. Why is the UK undergoing all of this stress with regards to the sanctions and things like that? Because Boris Johnson had us believe that the UK was pretty much immune towards any types of boomerang effects from the shock and awe sanctions imposed on Russia. In other words, it was Europe that is dependent on gas, continental Europe that's dependent on gas and oil and fertilizer. Us in the UK were pretty much immune to all of that.
Absolutely.
So why is the UK undergoing all of this stress?
Absolutely. That's exactly what Boris was telling us. That's exactly what all the newspapers were telling us. The British were the major supporters of the oil import ban a few weeks ago. I remember reading article after article about the pusillanimous Germans and the treacherous French and the cowardly Italians, that they weren't prepared to grasp the nettle and stop all Russian energy imports. And, you know, we on the other hand, had taken all the precautions. We'd built lots of windmills. We've covered the channel with windmills. So, you know, we're fine. This is what they were saying. The reality is that Britain is a trading economy. We import gas and oil far more than we like to pretend. We import Russian gas and oil, only, of course, it isn't called that. It's, you know, because we import it from Europe. But, of course, we claim or pretend to ourselves that it's all coming from Norway and the Netherlands. But anybody who'd really taken the trouble of consulting with the energy insiders, the energy industry, would have known that it was actually Russian gas and Russian oil. And, of course, they all forgot one absolutely obvious fact, which is that there is a global market in energy. So you can't cut off oil and gas to Europe and think that the rest of the world won't be affected. And Britain, which is a trading nation, I mean, it's not like the United States, which has a great deal of self-sufficiency built into it. Britain, which is a trading nation, is going to be particularly exposed to movements in world markets, world commodity markets. And of course, when it comes to food, well, I don't even remember what the proportion of the food we import is, but it is huge. I mean, if we didn't go on importing food, we would starve. I mean, the same thing, that problem arose during the Second World War, by the way. I mean, the most dangerous thing for the British was not, you know, the Germans bombing British cities. It was the U-boats, the submarines, cutting off Britain's food supply. And things have not got better since then. They got much worse. So we are a trading nation. We have to import things. We have to export things. We have to use our wits to stay ahead. And, you know, historically, we've been able to do it. But we are the very, very last people who should be embarking on a massive sanctions war, an economic war of attrition against the world's largest, biggest commodity producer, because inherently we are desperately vulnerable if we end up in that kind of economic attrition, and we should have known it.
All right, we will leave it there. TheDuran.locals.com. And go to the Durant shop, use the code GOODDAY, get 10% off all merchandise. Take care.